Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Film Show, where we've workshopped the plot and we've hacked around with the script, but we're still having trouble connecting with our audience. Perhaps it's just that the characters are unbelievable, or perhaps we should just give it all up and try teaching instead. Searching for a third act this week. Hugh Grant is a scriptwriter gone sour in rom-com The Rewrite. Susan Sarandon searches for a killer in frosty murderama The Calling. And a bunch of teens race to prove they're special in The Maze Runner. First up is 71, in which a British squaddie is lost and alone in Troubles-era Belfast. Jack O'Connell plays our hapless hero, wandering in the rubble and searching for a friendly face amid the murk.
Come back, sir, I'm human! Fuck, I can't fly past!
Get off me!
Please don't bring them back here.
A critical hit after its Berlin premiere, 71 gives us a drama on a powder keg. Recruit Gary Hook is alone in the dark with no one to trust. His barracks is out there somewhere, but so are dangers too numerous to count.
A real soldier? Fucking brilliant. What boy is he in?
I don't know, I was in a school.
Is it McGarry? Hoss Barracks? Hollywood?
I don't know, what are you doing out anyway? Get home.
I'm home. You lost? Come on, I take you back to your barracks. Come on, I'll take you to your barracks. It's up to you. What else are you going to do?
Joining us now are our own eager young recruits. It's Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Short. Peter, this is more of a thriller than a political drama, right?
Yes, it is. I actually found it very, very novel in this respect. I think, I may be wrong, but it's the first Troubles-era movie, the first movie about the Northern Ireland Troubles, that doesn't have the kind of very solemn issue movie sense of political importance. Interestingly, it's much closer to a kind of conspiracy thriller or crime movie, and it doesn't have that sense of, oh my God, this is so tragic. And I found that very refreshing, actually. I found it very novel, and it was much, because I was expecting a movie like, shall we say, Ken Loach's Hidden Agenda. And what I got with this, which is much more politically incorrect, I actually found this very, very refreshing, actually. I also found it very gripping. I thought it was very, very good indeed.
Catherine, it's got an element of something like Die Hard to it in a strange way, isn't it?
Yeah.
One man against them all. Yeah.
It sounds flippant to say, but I mean, that's what's audacious about it, is to put in this very freighted arena, basically a chase thriller and an absolutely gripping one. And it's just terrific. And it's almost like a silent film. You know, he doesn't say much, this poor guy having just the worst day ever, like in Die Hard. But he just runs along, my God, you're with him all the way. It's brilliant. And it doesn't have either what Peter's saying about what you predict from a Troubles drama or sort of what you predict from a thriller of this nature, because the kind of shock things that happen totally blew me away. Spoiler. They totally came at me when I wasn't expecting them. It was, and then final twist that happened. It's such an elaborate film that moves at such a lick that I'd sort of forgotten, okay, oh my God, of course. No! and it's the kind of film that reduces you to that childish sense of actually yelling at the screen. I didn't, but I might have.
Peter, it's also the film that hangs on its lead performance, right? And I mean, Jack O'Connell, what a year he's
had. I thought he was absolutely terrific. And I think I'm on board, fully on board now with Jack O'Connell. I must admit, I was a little bit agnostic about his prison movie, Stand Up.
Yeah.
But for me, he looks like, and what really struck me, he looked like the kind of young Albert Finney. He has that kind of pugnacious aggression plus sort of vulnerability, and he has the ability to suggest a kind of inner life of something going on, a kind of depth charge of emotional realization, which is happening, unspooling throughout the movie. And I really thought he was very, very good indeed. He really, this I think is his real breakthrough.
Everybody's looking for that boy. They don't care about you. You're just a piece of meat to them.
do that.
I'm going to get the gunman.
Next up, Susan Sarandon plays a boozy detective on the trail of a serial killer in small town Canada. The bodies are piling up and they're all trying to tell her something. This is The Calling.
I've never seen anything like this.
Hello, Hazel.
Who is this?
You know who it is. Are you ready to begin?
Here's Detective Mikalev. Here's a body. Here's a humdinger of a murder mystery. What's the best way to start a criminal investigation that could make or break your career? Have a drink.
You are in no shape to be chasing anyone.
Serial killers leave calling cards.
What is it?
No stomach. It's been removed.
You got a lot of truckers this time of morning, but you don't look like a trucker.
I'm not.
Catherine, did you hear The Calling?
Yeah, no, I did. I went to see it and watched it and heard it. Yeah. Thank you for checking.
That's cinema.
I mean, this is just good enough to be quite upsetting and traumatic. Mm. And even when you think it's going to get a bit hokey, when Donald Sutherland staggers on as a wise old priest explaining about
it's
Latin.
It's not a scary movie until Donald Sutherland's playing the troubled priest, really. And we get him. He turns up.
But it's kind of really quite enjoyable. Yeah. I mean, in an absolute sort of good telly way. Mm.
I haven't seen this film, but I had to go on Wikipedia to try and find out about the plot. And they said that the distinctive thing about it is that the murder victims have had their mouths open for a long time.
Yes.
I didn't really get why that was heavy drama.
It doesn't come across phrased like that. I don't think Wikipedia's doing it justice. The idea is that the murderer, I don't want to spoil anything, but the idea is the murderer has to hold the faces of his victims kind of steady in a kind of horrifying position long enough for rigor mortis to set in, and that means holding a mouth open for hours, so they kind of frozen in that position forever,
as if they,
you know, it is very boring. And yes, exactly, and the chances of being caught holding are sky high.
What are you up
frankly
to?
But there we are. That's what it is. I mean, I don't want to give any more, because that's part of what the kind of sinister occult code that the murderer is trying to give to the police is part of the way in which he's left the bodies, of course, in the traditional manner. I've got to say, I did quite enjoy Susan Sarandon. She is a bit preposterous in the role. When she kind of blunders on in the Fargo outfit, you can just see that she's just come out of her trailer thinking, what am I doing? How have I been cast? What is this job?
Someone get me a drink.
And she does that kind of staring around thing with that kind of, oh, these contact lenses are just killing me, kind of staring thing that she does. But it is quite entertaining in its own very absurd way.
Father, could you tell me what that means?
Liberare eos is a prayer of resurrection.
How exactly does it work?
It required 12 souls to sacrifice themselves to bring back the one. This prayer has been lost for 1,500 years.
I think somebody may have found it.
The Calling there. Now let's move on to The Rewrite, which has Hugh Grant wooing Marissa Tomei over the art of screenwriting. Here's Hugh pitching the film to Catherine.
Let's say Jack Nicholson decided that he wanted to know what people truly thought of him, whether his life had actually amounted to anything. So he fakes his death and stages his own funeral. You know, I just think the possibilities are pretty hilarious.
I sometimes think the pre-digital age was better. My attention span shriveled to almost nothing in the year about the year 2000, and that happened to be the year I started using the internet and sending emails and everything. And it's just got worse and worse. I can barely get to the end of the tweet without getting bored now. And I used to be able to read novels.
There is something. You have to hear me out.
You thought of me
for a teaching job.
Teaching is an absurd profession practiced by desperate failures.
Keith?
If it pays, I'll take it.
Chris Elliott in the press notes says that working with you was like working with butter. Is that something you recognise?
He's very nice. It was actually very buttery with him. It was lovely.
So if you were to extend the butter analogy a bit into that, how would you?
Well, I'd say that he spreads me and I lick him.
Thank you.
Like my little boy. That's all he does, is just get hunks of butter. Licks it.
I just have a question.
I would expect no less.
If you don't believe writing can be taught, what are we going to be doing in class?
So, the truth is that I'm going to be writing a movie about a teacher.
Who's going to be in it?
I'm not at liberty to discuss that, you know. Matt hasn't committed yet.
Matt Damon? Oh, my God.
Catherine, you and me are huge fans of music and lyrics, which is Hugh Grant and Mark Lawrence's best collaboration. And did pop go your heart for this one?
No, but it fluttered. fluttered. I mean, it didn't sort of sink as it did during the whole of Did You Hear About the Morgans, mm-hmm. which is their last collaboration. This is strange. I mean, even during the making of music and lyrics, Hugh Grant was sort of saying things like, I'm too old for this, and I'm too old for being the suitor of Drew Barrymore, and it's disgusting, but you just have to kind of pretend it doesn't matter, blah, blah. And he's just, there's been reports that came through last night of him saying again, I'm too old for rom-coms and blah, blah. And so what's happened here is that there's almost no romance in it at all. It's basically a comedy drama about a middle-aged bloke kind of finding his passion for life again. And not only does he have sort of no chemistry with Marissa Tomei at all, it doesn't matter because theirs is not even a sexual attraction somehow. It's sort of just entirely
brother-sisterly, really,
isn't
it? It's
just barely that. Yeah. It's just, and you know, when and it's a sort of anti-rom-com in things like where you would normally have the race back from the airport or something, he just gets a bus back to campus, you know. Mm. It's purposefully like that, which is quite refreshing.
They've got a conceit throughout where he keeps pitching ideas and you realise that they're real-world films. Like he mentions something that sounds exactly like As Good As It Gets, and there's one that sounds exactly like Wonder Boys. And I thought that was quite cute. I did think the film lacked something other than that, though. There was...
The main thing, I should perhaps confess, I quite liked Did You Hear About the Morgans? So please feel free to disregard everything I said. It's the same old story with any romantic comedy or romantic drama or comedy or relationship comedy, is that all the gags are in the first act. This is a movie about the third act. And the movie itself has the classic third act problem, that all the comedy has gone. By the end of it, it's pure solemn sentimentality. And it just exasperated me. It just gets so self-focused. And I was thinking, where are the laughs? I mean, okay, if it's a rom-com, you've got to have a romantic resolve. But you can't abandon comedy so utterly.
You're scowling, Catherine.
There wasn't meant to be, see, I'm just quite tired. I'm happiness. No, I just actually fundamentally disagree with Peter. I thought the first third was not funny, or not funny enough, even though I agree it was trying to be. And I thought the end was actually surprisingly sustained it, and so you did have all the slop. But you also, for instance, there's the scene where he plights his troth to... we might as well just spoil it. He plights his... anyway, there's a sort of romantic scene. Mm. And it's undercut by a woman behind him in the queue.
Rolling her
eyes. Just being really pissed off because he's taking
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it was sort of... You know, it's an old joke, but it was kind of nicely done and sort of undercut. And it was sort of embarrassed by its sentimentality, even though it seems to be a rom-com with no kissing at all, let alone... sort of loving sex.
How much are you supposed to read this being about Hugh Grant's career himself, that he's someone who's struggling to find his own third act, or someone who doesn't really care anymore, I guess?
Well, you know, what one would patronisingly say is that he needs to do a sort of team up with Alexander Payne or Sofia Coppola or something like that and do that.
Exactly.
But, I mean, I like the Lawrence Grant collaboration. I like it. I like the vibe of it. And I think this is a smarter film than it appears.
I'd like the ahi tuna.
Okay. Excellent choice.
Great. And a glass of Chardonnay.
Okay. Just need to see an ID.
Seriously?
Oh, that's just restaurant policy. Oh. I'm sorry, that doesn't look real.
Yes, it is.
I can take it to the manager.
I tell you what, why don't I order a Chardonnay and we can share it?
Okay, are we going to get straws? Am I 3 years old?
Well, we don't really know because your ID is fake.
Love of a Sort being optioned by the rewrite there. And now onto a young adult blockbuster in which a special teen is the only one who can save us all from a dystopian nightmare. This is this is The Maze Runner.
Can you tell me anything about yourself? Who you are, where you came from? Can you tell me your name?
I can't remember anything.
The Maze Runner, based on a book by James Dashner, stars a dreamy teen Moses who will lead his people out of the glade and through the maze to freedom. Will it succeed in grabbing more impressionable young recruits? A sequel is already on the way. The odds are forever in its favor.
What's through there?
You guys can't just keep me here.
I can't let you leave.
Why won't you tell me what's out there?
That's the maze. Every morning when those doors open, the runners look for a way out. And no one has ever survived a night in the maze.
What happens to them?
Peter, was this sprinting for freedom or running into a brick wall?
Oh my God, I'm literally now in Groundhog Day hell with YA films. I mean, really, I now almost literally can't tell
you did
them
know
apart.
That teenagers are going to save us all, right?
But yeah, like, well, that's fair
it's
enough.
The prophecy.
And God
now.
Love them. I almost can't take it anymore with these sort of future world deans who are super special and destined for greatness. There's something so bland about it and generic. I mean, all right, genre films are fine, but this is a genre that, frankly, I can live without now. There's something cynical and prepackaged about it now. And I now look back at, frankly, The Hunger Games, and I'm astonished, really, at how seriously I took it, considering that now I understand that they're all like this, and all these things like Ender's Game, and all that, they're all the same.
Divergent.
And, yeah. Yes, they're all the same. Always about games playing, always about proving yourself physically, and all with this strange celibate emphasis, which reaches its apogee with this film. These are guys who are in their late teens who have not seen a member of the opposite sex for 3 years. Now, any normal bunch of guys will have tensions in the group because of that. Surely they will have very specific tensions, and they're nothing to do with some maze, frankly. They're about the fact they're not getting any. And then a woman turns up, and how does this affect them? Well, it doesn't seem to affect them at all. They just react with a strange kind of detachment, which I felt, you know, they're not human, they're robots or something. That is if they're like members of some vast Christian rock band or something. Who are these people? I don't know. It flummoxes me. Really.
Not a bad platform for Will Poulter, though.
No,
who
not
plays
bad.
The main bullying baddie.
Yeah, and he is quite good, I must admit. Will Poulter seems to have grown a bit in this film, but not grown a few years. He seems to have grown about 20 years. I mean, his face almost looks like a kind of guy, almost, well, not middle-aged, but he looks like a mature guy. His face has that sort of bulldog effect. And he doesn't look like one of the fresh-faced youngsters by any means, even though he's the same age as them. He's kind of cragging up a little bit, or you could certainly see how he will crag up, but in an interesting way. I think he will be a really interesting kind of character actor, and his American accent is very good.
But I got that bulking up or aging up thing from a lot of the supporting cast. There's some guys that look like they're 40 years old and they've just been stuck in to save some money. It did come across as a bit cheap, this film, on occasion, didn't it?
It's strange. I mean, I quite like the surreality, in a word, of this, the glade, which apparently is some marshland in Louisiana, which they found. It's not entirely digitally fake. That place where they film it is real, although, of course, the maze itself is CGI. And in some ways, I like the strangeness of it. It has that kind of, for me, a kind of early sort of Doctor Who feel to it, which I quite like. But the fact that there are two or three or four movies like this in the pipeline.
You can't wait, can you?
I can't take it. I really can't take it.
Everything started changing the moment you showed up.
What if we were sent here for a reason?
The doors aren't closing.
They're here.
They're gonna keep coming back until they kill us all.
We get out now or we die trying.
That's the Maze Runner sprinting into a dead end there. And that's it from us. My thanks very much to you for watching. Thanks to Peter and Catherine, and we'll see you all next week.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. When you need to know what's in the news, you turn to The Guardian. When you want to create something newsworthy, you turn to Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog. Getting started takes only seconds. Just go to squarespace.com, and to support this podcast, use the offer code GUARDIAN to take 10% off.